This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on the nature of consciousness and life continuum as revealed through near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences. Some of the topics on our show include what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature a stellar roster of special guests who are both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. For more information about our organization Toward the Light, please visit our website, towardthelight.org. This week I am very pleased to have the author of a very brilliant, thought-provoking book entitled A Metaphysical Interpretation of the Bible. His name is Mr. Stephen L. Hatfield, PhD, and I hope you've got your reading lamps beside you, because this is a book worth a great study, over 800 pages long. So definitely we are going to have a lot to discuss about this hour or however long we can carry on here. Let's welcome to Toward the Light Mr. Dr. Stephen Hatfield. Hello, Stephen.
Reverend Juliet, it's a pleasure to be here, and thank you so much for allowing me to be on your show. Actually, it's an honor, so thank you.
Well, you're so welcome. There was something really, really auspicious that I wanted to kind of use as a segue into the show, because when I was looking at the cover, the book sleeve of your book, I found something written here by your editor that I just thought was so profound and so timely, and I want to share it. Her name is Christian Camerso. Did I say that correctly?
Actually, he's a Frenchman. It's Camerer.
Camerer, okay. And my failed eyes are not doing much better, so bear with me on that one.
Absolutely.
But it's very beautiful, and what is written here is so relevant that I want to read into it. It says, "What a wonderful adventure. Imagine you were born in a vast, dimly lit cave where everything, including the people, appears to be a dull gray. All you can see are shadows and darkness. As you grow up, you find your life is so strangely regulated by the Book of Rules, an ancient edict that controls even your most secret thoughts. You also learn that somewhere in the cave there is a crack in the walls that emanates a strange light. It is a forbidden place, guarded by furious animals, so that no one can truly inspect this anomaly. Later in life, your curiosity and your silent wish for a better environment finally throw you into action. Somehow, you manage to get past the vicious guards, and to avoid death, you dive headlong into the strange brightness. When your eyes finally adjust, you discover a new world full of colors, sounds, fragrances, and you will never to return to the darkness." Now, what is so profound about this is that just a fortnight ago, I was doing what's called a spirit releasement, helping to clear a spirit who was stuck. And as I was looking at the spirit, and I was focusing on someone back in the UK, although the deceased spirit can be anywhere, but he was focusing on his son who was in the UK. And I looked at the deceased man, and I said, "You keep looking at the shadows. You need to turn around and look at the light, because you've been surrounded by shadow and you think you're full of guilt and you think you're bad and you think you're small, whereas nothing could be further from the truth. Dear soul, just turn around, that's all you have to do, and look into the light, and you will know the truth, and you will be set free. Well, what's interesting is after doing only 2 out of 3 sessions, this entity became completely free, and the son was absolutely blown away at the peace of mind that he felt and that he experienced. And he said, Juliet, my father is no longer with me, and in fact, I'm not even drinking anymore. And I know the only reason I was drinking is because my father was an alcoholic. So it was something as simple as saying, turn around and look at the light. That is such a key. So I can see that there's going to be a lot in this about turning around and looking at the light. And what I would like to do, Dr. Stephen, is ask you, first of all, what drew you to the writing of this profound book?
Wow.
Big question.
well, I knew as a child, Juliet, that what I was hearing was not necessarily, it just didn't feel right.
Yes.
Along with, you add to that, a dad that wasn't the friendliest human in the world, and it set my feet on a journey, which has literally led me all over the world, looking under every leaf, every rock, into every eye, and to everything I could find as to why we did and do live in the idea of darkness and why we are afraid of the light, so to speak. Light meaning incredible understanding. And then through the years, it led me into monasteries, into India and Nepal, and I just realized there is a truth out there. And that truth is that our Creator is the most gentle, kindest, loving thing that doesn't condemn us. And I believe that's one of the chains that binds us into the fear of doing things, Juliet, like going to the light, because of what we may be condemned from doing.
Mm.
And what I discovered is there is no condemnation. I mean, if we really considered it, the divine can only live in acceptance of what it created. I mean, after all, we as parents, when we have children, the vast majority of us don't condemn them. We appreciate them and learn through them, and I believe that's also what the Creator wanted us to know, is it learned through us. So when I decided to write this, it was my desire to bring the light of understanding, the light of truth, to humankind, and for them to realize that we too are quite capable of doing everything every master that has ever done in the history of the world. But for us to actually accomplish that, there's one path that we can take, and that's called the path of self-acceptance, the path of divine perfection, finding the divine within us, and then accepting that.
Well, that is such an important point, because it is something that as near-death experiences, so many of us discover, you know, first of all, how totally and completely that divine love that is enveloping us at all times, and absolutely no sense of rejection or condemnation. And even as you were saying a little bit earlier, what common sense would have this essence of pure love condemning and destroying its own creation? It just simply does not make sense.
Never did. And Reverend Juliet, that's the real thing that put my feet on the path that it did. And I can love to share with your audience that when I was in India, I was told about an individual named Isha. I later found out Isha is an Eastern translation of Jesus, that he had actually been there, and the shock to me initially that he was there, well, it was shocking to come to that, especially at the age that I was, and then to realize even more so that he was taught what he knew was even more shocking to me. and I actually write about that in my book, not only that he was, but what he was taught, so that my fellow human can reach to higher levels of that light within, to realize that even the idea of a near-death experience is actually an honor by the Creator, saying, look, there's more. There's much more.
Yes.
Yes. That's another reason why that book was written.
Well, for me, you know, what's been the absolute joy and delight is that because I started having near-death experiences since infancy, and I've always been quite ill, and so what the illness has done really is provide an opportunity to have more intimate communion with other beings and the light source, because of not being so confined to the low vibrational frequency of the earth plane. And so a lot of times I was actually longing for it, because this is my opportunity to be with the angels and the spirit beings and God again, you know, and that sort of thing. But it taught me so much. Now, the downside of that is that as I was getting older, people started saying, oh, you're living in a dream world, you're not living in touch with reality, yada yada. But then, just to show you how strong the light is, I kept having near-death experiences. I kept having these episodes that taught me that I had been right all along. What I was seeing and experiencing as a mystic was indeed spot on. And then stumbling upon wonderful, wonderful books that were after the fact telling me that what I was seeing and experiencing were real, were accurate, were spot on. And so I find that very interesting, instead of, like a lot of people, reading the material first and then getting a degree. I had the experience first, got the degree, and then read the material.
At least
a doctor of experience.
At least you didn't live it backwards, and you can certainly feel solid about that. You know, one of the things I'd like to share with your with your readers, with your listeners, is the idea that we, and I believe is what Chris intended on the back, that we live in such limitation. You had the honor and privilege of stepping into many dimensions, even simultaneously. And we don't realize, as living flesh, that we can do these things at will. And that is one of the things that I share very deeply in a metaphysical interpretation, is you can live it as limited as you choose, but keeping in mind that it is nothing more nor less than simply a choice. And it's unfortunate that people want to say that you are living in an unreal world. I believe the interesting thing is your world in which you live is more of an infinite space than a finite space, and is as real, if anything, more real than what the vast majority of humankind themselves realize.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's because there's very limited, finite understanding of what consciousness is, and I think that's why this work, as the researcher and in the ear, you know, setting these examples that defy conventional reductionist science or materialistic science, because, for example, being legally blind, I was able to see 365 degrees all the way around, you know.
Certainly.
During all of my near-death episodes. Well, how do you explain that? And this is true for totally blind people.
They actually see more than people with physical eyes.
Yes, because it's clearly not the eyes that are seeing. It's not the brain that is doing the thinking. It's the consciousness.
Yes. Absolutely. That's another reason for a metaphysical interpretation is to bring that to the light of the mind of people, to give them a greater depth of what the idea of consciousness is and how far-reaching it is with all of humankind. When we look at things only through fleshly eyes, in fact, Christ himself said in the book of Matthew that judge not lest you be judged. My perception told me that through what I was studying that the book of Matthew is about physical material reality. And physical material reality is limited to what the fleshly eyes see. But when we look later in the text of the Bible and we look in the book of John, in the book of John, Christ now turns around and says, my judgment is true. Well, that almost seems like a contradiction on the surface. But if we understand the true depth of the message, Matthew being physical self, Mark being mental self, Luke emotional self, John soul or spiritual self, his point was simply this, that when we look at light only through fleshly eyes, we have the propensity to judge and limit it. But when we look through the eyes of soul, what we see is simply truth, and what we state is truth. Because for your audience, and as I know that you fully well know, Juliet, that when we look through the eyes of spirit and soul out at humanity, it can only see truth. And when it makes a statement, it states in truth, not in judgment. And I think that's the message that people need to understand.
And I can really, really feel that difference, too, because, for example, when I'm in that space and I experience the all as one, and everyone and everything I'm looking at is a part of me, and there's no way that it can be separate from me, there's no way that I cannot love everything that I am beholding. And there's a profound peace that comes over me because I know that everything's a part of the divine. Even that which seems to be chaotic or out of place. In fact, whilst I was on the other side, every time I was reminded, everything is evolving exactly the way it should. Everything is happening exactly the way it should. So it makes it imperative for us to be detached. And a really good example of this is the fact that I used to do a lot of paintings. I used to love to draw and paint. And if I was working on a painting in the middle of it, it looked like nonsense. And somebody would say, oh, you need to do this or that. And I said, wait. It's not done yet. It will make sense to you once it's done. But don't try to figure it out right now.
That's a beautiful message because I think us as humans are always too engrossed in figuring it out right now.
Yes.
And when it comes to the idea of life, even if we think of the idea of evolution, how can we determine something is done? And that would be virtually improbable if for no other reason the idea of infinity. If infinity is true, then that means all things are infinite, which now means there's no end, there's no conclusion. So how can we determine a painting when that one painting is actually never done?
Exactly. And so I will share this with people too and just say, well, what you're perceiving today is just here for the moment. But something is going to change, something is going to evolve, we are all evolving. And so I've really tried to encourage people that it's so paramount that we have a very open mind, always. And, yes, how can we get overcome this static way of the shadow? I was so blown away by seeing this in the book sleeve because that's exactly the metaphor that I've been using quite a lot lately, in fact. Quite a lot. And tell us some more, Stephen, about the work of this book. Was there an incident that grabbed you and said, all right, I've got to start writing this now, or was it some channeling that was coming to you as you were researching?
I would say a little of all of the above. If I might, to echo something about oneness for your audience.
Sure.
When I was originally in Vietnam, Southeast Asia, and encountered some magnificent Zen as my first teachers. And they suggested that I always follow my urges, my inner being, my inner learning or inner tuition or intuition on things. And then I found myself years later going to college, and I had this urge to go to India. And as I progressed through the months and days, or I should say days and months of that school year, Reverend Nightingale, this urge was just, I just couldn't resist. Now, I had never been to India, and I'm going to give the short version of this. And I knew I was going to graduate. I sold everything I had, got an open-ended ticket, and literally found myself in India going, what in the world am I doing here? And I just, still following my urge, began to journey northward, actually northeastward, northwestward, sorry. I found myself at the end of each day in a little village, and would be invariably be invited to stay with the family in the village, ate their food, would get up the next morning, and there would be an elderly gentleman that would greet me, and he would draw me a map in the dirt. Well, this pattern went on for weeks until I found myself in the northern reaches of India and near what's known as the Punjab or the deserts. And I was thirsty, sat down, was drinking a cup of tea at from a basically a roadside shack. And from behind me, this voice said, "We have been waiting for you." Well, I knew nobody knew I was there, so I didn't even bother to acknowledge it. And the next thing I heard actually shocked me, Reverend Juliet, because I heard my name. The same voice said, "Your name is Stephen, is it not?" And I slowly turned and looked into the softest brown eyes I had ever seen. And my answer to which was yes. And he said, "Good, we've been waiting for you." It was my one of, which I didn't know at the moment, was going to be one of my teachers, Master Lobsang. And he repeated and said, "We have been waiting for you." And I looked at him and said, "How did you know that I was here?" And he said, "We began focusing on you about 6 months ago, and we knew that you would be here on this day at this time." And I asked, "How did they do that?" And my lessons began in the idea of consciousness, because they let me know that that's where they began to reach out to me, was in the realm of consciousness. And the idea of oneness. That's how powerful consciousness and oneness is. And from that simple moment is when my life began to unfold at a shocking pace. And I realized that the rest of humankind needed to know truth. Not mine, but universal truth. And that entire book has its basis in universal truth and not just simply mine. That's what I was taught while I was in India and Nepal.
Well, I'd be pleased for you to share some of this. I really wanted to acknowledge what a profound and powerful point you just made about the telepathic communion between you and these souls. You know, and the fact that you were receptive, they were receptive, and maybe, you know, consciousness being so multifaceted, we may not always be aware on a conscious level, but still things start happening to us. We'll pick up on things in our dreams. We may experience a sensation or a color or something. And then all of a sudden, when you approach the scene where that incident is supposed to start unfolding, there's a recognition that takes place.
Absolutely. One of the things that that every human that can hear this show, and I can honestly say that every human alive has had the experience, Reverend Juliet, is this. If we have fond memories of a person we haven't seen in a very long time, and we focus on them for a matter of a few moments, generally speaking, more times than not, what's going to happen is we will have an encounter with that person. We will bump into them seemingly coincidentally, or they will call us. what happens is just a connection through consciousness, linking one person to the next. And all of us are capable of it. What most of us don't realize is a very simple thing, and that's that consciousness is inescapable. And it is constantly proving itself to us through methodologies such as what was just suggested. The beauty of it is we can actually use it for communication, literally, through great distances. It's not limited to anything other than what we as the individual decide to limit it to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And two really good examples of that were when I was located in Nashville, Tennessee, USA, and my daughter was located in Manhattan, New York City, during 9/11. And all we had to go on was the telepathy between us. And it was just because of that I was able to know for certain that my daughter was all right. But it doesn't end there, because we also have telepathic communion with beings who are on other dimensions simultaneously. So that's why I'm always trying to encourage people that, you know, it could be from across the way, it could be from another place on the planet, it could be from another dimension. It doesn't matter. You can still connect, because we are all constantly and infinitely conscious. And that's why I feel so emphatic about that, because when people leave their bodies behind, they don't leave their consciousness behind.
Absolutely not. One of the things I love to share with people is, one, I communicate with the other side, such as you do, quite often. So I know personally that when we shed the body, it's no different than a snake shedding its skin.
Right.
And that what we do is we find ourselves going, okay, now what?
Yeah.
Because there we still stand. We still, in essence, have form. It's just our, what we've all heard is termed as our energy body. It's no longer a, so to speak, physical body, but we still have substance. We still, to a degree, have form, and we don't use words, so to speak, because we don't necessarily have vocal cords. And I've always sensed that life was teaching us to enhance these abilities while we're alive, and I think you are a leader in that paradigm, Reverend Juliet. You've shown that on many occasions to our world and our reality. I think people have to learn to understand that our reality is only limited to what you believe it to be. And if that's true, then if our belief limits it to what we believe it to be, then we are certainly not stepping into the infinite being that the Creator made, and to which I talk about at great length in a metaphysical interpretation. In essence, I share with people, here's how you do it. Here's what's available to you. Here's who you are. And here's what you can do with it. The only idea is that we live through the divine nature, not only the physical, which is what we do.
The thing that I always feel, too, is that, and this has become my favorite catchphrase lately, have you received your key mail yet, telepathic mail?
I like it.
And I encourage people, in fact, a few months ago here at the Edgar Cayce AIE Center, I gave a workshop on the nature of consciousness, intuition, and telepathy, and I was talking about that, and I made a couple of interesting analogies, because I'm always paying attention to this myself. Because people are always thinking about us, they're always sending thoughts our way and what have you. And I thought, well, okay, so maybe some of the telepathy, indeed, we do receive in real time. And then there's other telepathy that is waiting in queue in the T-mail box for us to open it up and then listen to it. And the interesting thing about telepathy is, because it is mind-to-mind, heart-to-heart, soul-to-soul communion, it is not confined to language. And in fact, I remember one time my daughter asking me, during one of my near-death support groups, you said, Mum, if somebody speaks to you in Spanish, do you hear in Spanish or English? And I said, well, it's really not about language. You hear it in whatever language you understand it, but you understand it more from the soul. So really there is no space for misunderstanding with telepathy, because it's just really organic.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been my experience of it. So you can, somebody can be telepathically projecting something in Portuguese, but someone in India might be hearing it in Indian, you know, mm-hmm. and or what have you. And so then there's no misunderstanding anywhere. So I really, really condone, you know, for people paying attention to their dreams, paying attention to, and this is another thing that makes me sad, is how this stuff has been demonized, you know. The bad guys are trying to keep us from seeing that light again, because the light keeps us in touch with truth.
Absolutely. One of the things that I share completely, and a metaphysical interpretation is that, well, Christ said, if the blind lead the blind, shall they both surely not fall in a ditch. And I believe that's one of the things that has occurred. I'm not, forgive me for the sounding of this, there are many paths, and all paths are acceptable, and there should be no condemnation, if there's a should, of any path.
Exactly.
But when we have a path that leads us into limitation, then it leads us away from the truth of our own divine nature. And one of the things that I highly point out in a metaphysical interpretation is that we are all capable of so much more than what we offer to life. And if we offered the truth of everything about ourselves, would there be... the interesting dilemmas that we face today as humankind, that answer would be no. Keeping in mind, as you said earlier, there's no such thing as an accident, that everything happens for divine purpose. Everything that we're seeing going on, even the economy today, has its basis in you are, in a sense, trusting in the wrong things. Why do you not have faith in you? Why do you not
exactly.
have faith in the Creator and it knowing what it's doing?
And anything that isn't based in truth is going to ultimately crumble. And so, personally, I'm celebrating all of this, even though it's difficult, but through these challenges, we are made to be stronger and more aware.
Aren't these really designed to get us to see the idea of the illusions that we have created?
Oh, goodness me, yes.
And I believe that's an important thing for all people out there to fully understand, that we have created an illusion which is now to a great extent in control of the human, which its purpose was never designed for that. Its purpose was designed to a degree to make our lives easier, but we've given it such significance our life has become difficult, and I believe that's the root of what we're seeing right now.
Now, are you referring to like the economic system?
Oh, yeah.
And all that?
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
All ancient texts, not the Bible alone, says that we are first to seek the kingdom, which is within us, and then everything else is given to us. What we've done is we've sought it on an external level, and that hasn't worked. So we're being led, I believe, completely back to where we are intended to be standing in the first place. That's my perception of what's going on. Is it difficult? Only to an extent. It's a more of an equation of who do you trust,
mm-hmm.
which should be the idea of self.
Yes, yes. And I, you know, personally, and this is just my own feeling, is that the whole economic system was not meant to make things easier. It was meant to enslave us. And that is exactly what it's done, because when I think about money, the properties of money, what happens is it's used to monitor. It's used to document you. It's used to manipulate you. And it's used to control you. Nothing can you do with money without those four things being into play. That all spells fear to me. And when I think of what you were just saying, when we can look in ourselves, because here's another example of the other side, is that just with a thought, just with an intent, just with our heart, we could create anything that we wanted and needed.
Yes, ma'am.
Just with that very thing, we could be with whomever we want. Just with that very thing, we could be wherever we want. So who needs this artificial medium that's being imposed on us to completely enslave us and hold us down? And my attitude to that is, no, thank you very much.
I'm in absolute alignment. I was taught that many years ago by my teachers that anything that has power over us is actually a teacher of sorts.
Yeah.
To show us where the true power resides. The fact is, we have the ability to create any and everything that we want. And
exactly.
That is heavily talked about in my book, A Metaphysical Interpretation.
And yay.
In a sense, I believe that's what I'm attempting to share in this moment with the audience. You see, in the Far East, they have a thing called the Path of the Bodhisattva. And in the Path of the Bodhisattva, it shares this idea that on the path of life, when you encounter an enemy, view your enemy as a teacher and honor them as such. And as by so doing, your teacher goes away or your enemy goes away.
Yes.
And when we see the idea of the economy, the idea of the power, the people that want to have the dynamics of control, what we're actually witnessing is their loss of that as we realize the teachings contained within the idea of an illusory monetary system. And I believe that's one of the hugest things that's going on right now in our reality. As we're being shown the truth, the question is are we able to see it? We can if we choose. And by so doing, then any power outside of us no longer has any power whatsoever. We realize the illusion.
Exactly. And how we respond to that is going to be huge. And when we can keep remembering, as I love to remind people, only because it's quite so, only love prevails.
Yes, ma'am.
When we can keep remembering that, then honestly, all of this other stuff is going to slip away. And I remember another time when I've had these talks, you know, people use the words right, wrong, good, bad, this, that. And, you know, instead of using those words, I like to look at it as something that doesn't work versus it's something that does work. So when you find that something doesn't work, all right, let's work on it until it does work. And it doesn't mean that we despise it or destroy it. It just means, all right, this doesn't work properly. So how can we adjust this?
Interestingly enough, and this perfect segue into this, Reverend Nightingale, and that's that we get the, by the way, right and wrong, as you know, is nothing more than another form of duality.
Yes.
Good and bad, same thing. but where they actually came from was right out of the book of Genesis, where it says, now you know the difference between good and evil. Of course, good and evil is good and bad, and so on. But what we may not realize is there's another ancient Aramaic translation for good and evil, and it actually, the second translation is simply this, now you know the difference between truth and error. If knowing the difference between truth and error, now we have a steering mechanism. Truth is what we seek, and error is the guiding energy back to truth, which negates the idea of good and bad altogether.
And I think Mary Baker Eddy, who discovered Christian Science, was leaning very much in that direction with that dialogue.
Yes, ma'am. But that is a universal principle.
Mm.
I mean, if we are a scientist, let's say, we don't see it as this is a good thing or this is a bad thing. We see the truth in the experiment, and we see the error, and we keep going.
Yes.
When we see good and bad and right and wrong, we have the propensity to stop. But if we see truth and error, then it's always evolutional forward movement in every given moment. And truth and error are the dynamics of creation. There is no right or wrong. There cannot be. Especially in light of the fact that if there's no such thing as a coincidence, there can't be good and bad, nor can there be mistake, nor can there be failure. That can be the only opportunity to realize truth, to realize error. And I feel deeply that those are the keys that any of us as human can work with and live by. It makes it simpler.
It really does. And then when we stop thinking in things in terms of judgments, then that eliminates the idea of being destructive.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So there really is a formula that works there, and it's so simple.
You know what? That's a beautiful idea, and here's why. All masters throughout times have always shared with us that the best things are the simplest things. Mm-hmm. And Christ himself gives us a direct hint, not once but twice, when he says that to enter the kingdom of heaven, you must have the mind of the child. To enter the kingdom of heaven, you must have the innocence. And us adults always feel that if it's not complex, it just can't be. Yet the best things, from food through life through experience, ladies and gentlemen, look for the simplest idea, and you found the truest part of the experience. It's always there in its simplicity.
Yes, indeed. And the near-death episodes take us back to that, too. And also the good news, I like to remind people in case they're, you know, fidgeting a little bit, you don't have to have a near-death episode to have such profound experiences like this. In fact, as the vibrational frequency is being raised all the time, you could just naturally be popping into such an experience because of the... It's a frequency thing. It's not something that really happens to the body. And so you can just be taking a beautiful walk, and all of a sudden you feel that oneness with all that is, and you cannot necessarily explain how it happened, but it doesn't need to be explained. Just know that you are tapping into who you are.
Well, if we didn't, if there's one error in life, it would be the illusion of separation.
Yes,
it would completely
yes.
be the illusion of separation. That's not possible. Not really. And when we do it, we only do it in our minds. The beauty of life, and a person, and you are correct, you don't have to have a near-death experience. Because you see, life is oneness, and when you can live it, through that experience, it totally changes absolutely every perception anyone ever had about life. I've been blessed by having the opportunity of living the life of a monk in the Far East and coming to those realizations in a very simple way, through myself, not by avoiding me, but by the acceptance of me.
And I've really appreciated the monastic life myself, but I tend just by my own nature to live the monastic life because of being alone and reading and studying and writing and playing music and just communing with the source, and I really love that. And any way that I can help share some of this special beauty and truth with others just brings the greatest joy to me. And I'm seeing so much synchronicity, as I said, even seeing the message on this book sleeve when it was not even a month ago, I was using that very same metaphor, believe it or not.
that's called consciousness right there, lovely one.
Oh, yes. It was just so absolutely wonderful. And I found out after this, the spirit releasement was complete, this man had not had such peace of mind since he was 13. That's when he had last his father, because his mom moved him to England and his father stayed in America. Mm-hmm. And so I think there was a lot of, you know, guilt and all of that kind of thing. What a shame that needn't have been done. So there was a lot of stuff going on for all these years, and just this simple, but it doesn't always seem simple, work was magnificently successful. Just turn around and face the light. And yet, sadly, there are forces around who are trying to say, oh, don't face the light, that's a trap too. Well, excuse me, but when love is real, you cannot truly be trapped.
When love is genuine, it's experienced through the heart. I was sharing something with a few people the other day, if I might, and that was this, that probably if we were to look in the history of the world at the most written about subject, I would say it's on the idea of love. Yet once someone writes about it, they've intellectualized it. And then once it's been intellectualized, it's been taken out of the realm of emotion and feel. And then we have the reader come along and pick up the book and begin to read it. And then what we've done again is we've intellectualized it. And I truly sense, Reverend Juliet, that when people do that, they actually tend to bring about a separation of the idea of what love is. Love comes from the heart and is truly a feel. It's not a thought. It's an experience through the heart to be shared from one human to the other. And as long as we attempt to intellectualize it, I don't know how we can appreciate the magnificence and the beauty of it, because it's in our mind. It's not in our heart. I hope that just made sense.
It makes a tremendous amount of sense, and that's why I was saying earlier that I really enjoy having the experiences first and then reading about them. Because that's what gives it so much more substance and meaning, and that also enables me to more easily convey something that's utterly ineffable. But you've got to experience it first and then read it, in my point of view.
Oh, absolutely. And the only way you can experience it is to never hold yourself from it. And I found in my experience, I feel the vast majority of people actually want to control it or have fear of it for whatever reason. My suggestion to every human out there that's listening to the show is just let yourself go. Step into the openness of your own heart. Don't allow your past to stop you from the greatest experience and the greatest gift of life we could ever have been offered, and that's the experience of love. Don't love with conditions, because that's an extremely limiting concept. Just be open and love all things simply for who it is or what it is. And when you look at all of life through that set of eyes, it gives you a whole new paradigm, a whole new view of a magnificent realm. And we don't have to go anywhere other than in this world to have that experience right where we stand.
And that love never ceases to come to you, too.
Absolutely. You know, something I feel a lot of people miss, and it's this. If you do not love yourself first, then that automatically means that you cannot love another. That also means that no one can love you. Why? Because we are allowing ourselves to stand away from it by not enjoying the power of the of creation that it gave to us as a human. To choose to have that experience, but it must begin with us if there's a must.
So it's really a good idea to become like a child with an attitude of play and glee, and that everything is going to be truly wonderful. And, you know, because I think somehow there is a default in our soul that says we are loved at all times, and then we are conditioned and trained out of that. So that's what we need to work on, you know, just opening up and being really, really centered in that love. But it is the fear that keeps us removed from the truth, And that's what we need to work on, that this encroachment, the shadow. So I think if people can keep being reminded of this wonderful message, just turn away from the shadow and turn towards the light, because that's where you'll find the love and eternal light. And it really is. It doesn't matter what we call it.
Absolutely.
Because we can recognize it.
Who was that gentleman that said a few years back that let your light shine as though a city on a hill? I think he was talking about that from our heart, from our love. Let that
light shine. Yes.
Let that be the beacon to all of humankind. And it's not that difficult to do. As long as we live in our past, we may not be able to accomplish that. But when we live in our present, and all we have is the gift of today in reality, that when we live in that gift of the present today, there is only one thing that we would find, and it's never overshadowed by the past. And in fact, my experience, when there's an entity that's afraid to go to the light, it actually has a fear of being rejected through the idea of the heart without ever coming to the realization that the Creator is not capable of doing that. It just simply cannot.
Exactly. And you know, we've still got a lot of work ahead of us to teach that truth too, because a lot of people still blatantly claim that that rejection, and it just couldn't be further from the truth. You know, often millions upon millions of us have died, and some of us over and over again have all come back with the message that the love is always with us.
Always. The thing I was taught, that even the idea of rejection, Reverend Nightingale, is just simply the teacher on the path of acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I love to share with people is when you're having what you perceive as a negative experience, turn it around and look at the other end, and there's your lesson. An obvious one is simply this, that when you're feeling levels of impatience, it's just you're being taught patience, that's all.
And yes.
All one does is simply become patient, and impatience disappears. Fear is a teacher of love. And when we overcome or release the fear, and all that remains is the idea that we're afraid of in the first place. And sometimes rejection can be the fastest teacher to that one end.
And no matter what nightmare we've experienced, if we can turn it around and accept it as a gift, when something seemingly negative happens to me, I always ask, what is the message in this? What's going on? What do I need to know? Instead of falling into pity.
Absolutely. You know, sharing on a personal note, if I might, I had a very interesting dad that I later realized was in more pain than I was. I shared at the beginning of the show that he was the reason for my journey and the discoveries that I had. Extremely abusive, so much so that one day I was doing a speaking tour on the East Coast, and the majority of my family still lives there. I was visiting, and as families are wont to do, we had gotten together, and we were sitting on the back deck, and my youngest brother looked at me and said, hey, bro, thanks. And I said, thanks for what? He said, well, maybe you don't realize it, but whenever you were around, the rest of us felt safe because we knew if Dad was going to go on one of his tirades, he was going to go after you. And that's true. But you see, I see it as one of my greatest teachers for having incredible levels of compassion and love for my brothers and sisters in this world. Because we all have experience. It just depends on how we choose to see the experience.
Yes.
And I just love to share that with people, because we can have our pity parties, but of what value will you gain through you by so doing? Very little, in all sincerity. Your greatest value is what Reverend Nightingale offered. What can I learn here? What can I know about me in this moment here? And if we can all look at our lives through those eyes, it makes life a very, very different concept. In fact, a magnificent concept. Of course, I look at it now as I got all my negative karma out of the way as a kid, so It actually freed me.
Oh, gosh. Well, we're just about out of time, love. Have you got any special announcements? Will we share your websites and any love courses to. Coming up you'd like to share?
Yes, I'd love to. My website is www.hairfield.com. I am also, by the way, a certified intuitive of ARE there in Virginia Beach. I do work with them on their seminars once a year. To me, that's like a PhD in intuition. So I'd like to share that. And I'd like to leave, if I might, a small message for people. We're at a period in the history of the world where we're going through a tremendous level of awakening. That awakening is the truth of your own being and the truth of your own heart. And any encounter that you have in any given moment, on any given day, with any given human that you meet, share that center of your being. And when you leave them and walk away from them, touch them in that manner so that they also may carry that same interesting, loving message forward to another human being. And through that vehicle and through that methodology, our world will finally evolve, which it's going to anyway, but it will make it simpler. And it will bring about a dynamic that is working its way into life as we speak. My name is Stephen, and it was a pleasure sharing with you today, Reverend Juliet Nightingale. And may your journey be in love, I know that it will, light, and peace. And you continue your message.
Well, thank you, friend. And it has been so lovely speaking and sharing with you as well in this most special way. We have been speaking with Dr. Stephen Hairfield, the author of the beautiful book, A Metaphysical Interpretation of the Bible. And it's a great read, lots of very interesting, thought-provoking material in there. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale reminding you that it is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please do remember that only love prevails. We will talk to you next week on another transmission of Toward the Light, leading back to the source. Blessings and light to all.